presenting Rav Schechter, Rabbi Mintz, is upstairs running a Hanukkah workshop for beginners. This is really a very, very, very important series for me personally. To hear Rav Schechter speak about different aspects of Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik had many Talmidim over the course of all of the years that he had at Yeshiva, at Yeshiva University, and in other places that he gave Shiur. But if there is one who learned as much Torah from the world as one could learn, certainly is Rav Schechter, who was close to him personally and who absorbed the most profound teachings of the Rav. Therefore, it's really a very special privilege for everybody and a great honor for us to hear Rav Schechter speak about his teacher and our teacher, his Rebbe. Tonight, the Rav has posted.
Rav Soloveitchik was known by many of his Talmidim as the Rav. Usually when one refers to a Rav, you mean someone who paskens a lot of shaylos. A Rosh Hashiva is usually one who gives a shiur, and a Rav is somebody who paskens shaylos. Rav Soloveitchik, I don't think, was really so keen about paskening shaylos. He enjoyed much more just giving the abstract shiurim, as opposed to relating the abstract halachas to the real life situations. In fact, in his book that he wrote in memory of his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, that's entitled Isha Halacha, which was written right after his father passed away and is dedicated to him. The opening passage in the book quotes a comment from the rabbis regarding this week's Sedra, that when Yosef was about to sin with Eishes Potiphar, so he visualized the image of his father in the room. He visualized as if his father was there, and that held him back from sinning. So Rabbi Soloveitchik opens up his book with this caption from the Talmud. So I mentioned just this week that someone was making a whole, someone published a whole essay where he was trying to figure out what sin was Rabbi Soloveitchik about to do that he wrote this. So it's very obvious. He just wrote this about, the whole book is a description of his father. So he just wrote the Mus Diukna Shalaviv. He didn't mean the whole context about Yosef who was about to sin. Just the book Isha Halacha is a description of what his father was, what his father meant to him. In the Isha Halacha, where he describes what type of a person his father was and his grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, he writes that this type of an Isha Halacha is one who really enjoys just studying abstract halacha, as opposed to relating it to the real life situations. Sometimes when you have to relate the halacha to the real life, you're disappointed that it doesn't really live up to reality. The situation doesn't really compare to what it should be. So that's what he really did. I don't think he really enjoyed Paschal Shavuos too much. He used to say in public very often, in Yiddish, he would say, "I'm not a Rav, I'm a Malamed. If Benishkin Rav, I've been a Malamed." And everybody would be, and then he would say, and he's not embarrassed about being a Malamed, there's nothing embarrassing, there's nothing humiliating about that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Malamed. The Pasuk, and we recite it in the davening, "A Malamed Torah le'amo Yisrael." HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described as the one who teaches the Torah to his Jewish people. So he said, there's nothing humiliating about being a Malamed. In Europe, that was considered a very lowly profession for one to be a Malamed. So he said, he's not embarrassed about it, adirabe, just the reverse. He feels that it's a fulfillment of the mitzvah of the halachta bedrocha. You have to go in the ways of God, to be kind and to be benevolent and so on. Mahu chan and afato chan, mahu mevakar cholim and so on. So mahu malamit Torah lama Yisrael afato. If a person teaches Torah to the Klal Yisrael, that's also a form of the fulfillment of the mitzvah of the halachta bedrocha. Why is it that he was called the Rav? So this is a historical question. When did he start being called the Rav? If I'm not mistaken, the story, as I recall, goes as follows. I remember when I first entered Rav Soloveitchik Shir in the late 1950s, he was not known as the Rav. They used to call him lovingly by his initials, but he was not known as the Rav. And then, when my group of students and my age, Chevre, came to the yeshiva, we never knew Dr. Belkin, who was the president of the yeshiva university. We never realized that Dr. Belkin was officially the Rosh Yeshiva. When Dr. Rebel passed away, so there was a ganze shaila, there was a whole sichsuch among the Talmidim, who should be appointed as Rosh Yeshiva. So the students, the members of the board had a day, and the students had a big day, and the students, I think, voted Dr. Belkin in as the Rosh Yeshiva, because he was very close to them, and he used to give them money to go out on dates. And he lived in New York, and he was very friendly, and he said, wonderful shurim, they loved him very much, so they appointed him the Rosh Yeshiva. And then there was another Eisik as to who should be appointed as the president of the whole institution. At that time, there was no big university with graduate schools and everything, a little college, yeshiva with a college. And then later on, some of those who chose Dr. Belkin as the Rosh Yeshiva felt that it would be detrimental for him that he should become the president. Whatever it is, it turned out he was appointed the president of the institution as well. So Dr. Belkin said shurim in the yeshiva, even after he was appointed president, and he was talking to Rosh Yeshiva. We never knew Dr. Belkin. My chaver, we never knew Dr. Belkin as a magid shiva at all. We knew he used to give the bechinas for the smicha students. So in our time, he was Dr. Belkin. He was the president of the institution. And I remember every year, Rav Soloveitchik Zichrono Livracha used to give the shiur on Rav Yitzchok Hanan's yahrzeit. I seem to remember. Every year in Hador, on Rav Yitzchok Hanan's yahrzeit, the yeshiva rabbinic alumni has some function. So Rav Soloveitchik used to give the shiur. I remember one year the Rav didn't feel well, whatever, he had a cold, and it was raining, he couldn't come in. So Dr. Belkin pinch hit, so he said the shiur. Okay. Then the next year Dr. Belkin took over that shiur, and he continued till his period continued, and then Dr. Lin continued saying that shiur. So at that time, I remember the members of the administration were saying Dr. Belkin is the Rosh Hashim. He's going to say the shiur. And I remember the students were so furious at that. We never knew Dr. Belkin is the Rosh Hashim, we knew him as the president. How does this man come off? That's what we were wondering. How does this man come off? How do you have the audacity to say Yeshiva Rav Soloveitchik was saying that shiur every year? How did he say that? So the students, they thought the administration was making up a baba mai. Said that Dr. Belkin was the Rosh Yeshiva. Since when was he the Rosh Yeshiva? He was. From 1941 on, he was the Rosh Yeshiva. But the younger fellows never knew that. So I seem to remember that it wasn't me. It was people who were older than me. They decided, look, in a lot of communities in Europe, there was a Rav and there was a Rosh Yeshiva. So we'll give Dr. Belkin all the covet that's due to him, we'll call him the Rosh Yeshiva. We'll give Rav Soloveitchik another title, we'll call him the Rav. If I'm not mistaken, this was a little after Rav Velvele Soloveitchik passed away. Rav Velvele Soloveitchik passed away on Yom Kippur of Tavshin Chof in September of 1959. And I think this was maybe a year or two after that the students came to the realization. Rav Velvele Soloveitchik was also Nishken Rav. He was true, he was the Rav in Brisk. But he didn't really function as a Rav. He said he wasn't a Rosh Yeshiva either. He said he had a small, very, very small group of Talmidim, and that was it. Or to a very small group of elite students. That was all. So I remember the students decided that they were going to allow Dr. Belkin to retain his title as the Rosh Yeshiva, that they thought that the administration had invented from thin air, which was not true. He really was the Rosh Yeshiva. And they decided then they're going to call Rav Soloveitchik the Rav. But I don't really think that the title the Rav had anything to do with the fact that Rav Soloveitchik was very much into Psak Halacha, just the reverse. He was not so much into Psak Halacha. When people would pressure him for his opinion on a halachic issue, and so he would always try to shirk the responsibility. He wasn't really interested. And then they would pressure him, and he knew that they wouldn't go ask Rav Moshe Feinstein or someone else. And they said, whatever you say, that's what we're going to do. So he had no brayer, so he had to give his opinion. Or in the yeshiva, every so often he would give a shiur in Yerudeim. It's a yeshiva, they have to give smicha to Rabbanan. So he had to give a shiur in Yerudeim. In fact, there were years that every other year he would give a shiur in Yerudeim. I was in the shiur 3 times when he learned Yerudeim. 1 year, then a pause 2 years later, then a pause, I think, 2 or 3 years later. I heard Yerudeim 3 times. In the 10 years that I studied Rav Soloveitchik, I heard Yerudeim 3 times. And he gave shiurim on Orach Chaim on occasion, he gave shiurim on Eben Ezra, sometimes on Chosh Mishpat, but he gave shiurim on Shulchan Aruch. But it wasn't really, he used to say, I think, it's not really his forte to give the Psak Halacha. But still, the Rav was a Pesach, whether he enjoyed it or not, whether that was his main the main aspect of it was clearly not the main aspect of him as a Talmud Chacham, but he clearly was a person. So I wanted to speak a little bit about the various aspects of the Rav as a person. One of the students tells over the following story, I was not present, tells over the following story, which I think is really very telling and very indicative and very typical. Rav Soloveitchik on one occasion stayed in the yeshiva for Shabbos. He rarely did. One occasion he stayed in the yeshiva for Shabbos. On the Shabbos they asked him if he could say Havdalah for the boys in the shul after they finished davening mark. So Rav Soloveitchik noticed that the minhag in yeshiva was that everybody sits when they recite Havdalah. So he said, no, he doesn't want to say Havdalah. Let someone else say Havdalah. He's going to say his own Havdalah later. So he kept on, thought he didn't want to covet or something of saying Havdalah. So he kept on asking, no, Rebbe, you say Havdalah. And he kept on insisting, no, he doesn't want to say Havdalah. He's going to say his own Havdalah privately. So they didn't understand why. So after they finished saying Havdalah, he explained to them that he noticed that at that time, the minhag was not a minhag in yeshivas that everybody stands for Havdalah, but at that time, this was a long, long time ago, the practice was that everybody would sit for Havdalah. There's different minhagim. Rav Soloveitchik said that his family tradition is that they sit for Kiddush and they stand for Havdalah. So he didn't want to recite Havdalah sitting, because that's not in accordance with his family tradition. He didn't want to recite Havdalah standing, because that was not in accordance with the yeshiva tradition. So he said, let them say Havdalah the way they want to, and he's going to say his own Havdalah later on. So one of the students had asked him right afterwards, but Rebbe, you just explained in the shiur a month earlier, they were studying Gemara Brachas, and Tosis explains why the more correct practice is to sit when you recite Havdalah. He gave a whole shiur explaining why Tosis says you have to sit. So he says, that was the shiur that he gave. He explained why Tosis said you have to sit, but that's not his family practice. The shiur that he used to give in the yeshiva, he would often just explain what it says in the Gemara, and he would not always explain what his personal practice was. He would not necessarily even explain what the maskan in Shulchan Aruch is. A lot of times we would study Gemaras, many, many times we would study Gemaras. Rav Soloveitchik just explained all the different opinions, and he would not give you what the final maskan is, halacha lemaisa, what the psak is, which opinion we follow. So he said what he was explaining in the Tosis is what Tosis said, but his family tradition is otherwise. I think this incident is one incident. I'm sure there are a million incidents like this that the Talmidim can tell over. All fascinating stories. This incident is very, very indicative, I think, of Rav Soloveitchik's style. In Sak Halacha, he had a very strong tradition in Halacha, how to paskin. And he felt that just like you have to have a tradition and how to analyze Gemara, how to approach Gemara, so too one has to have a tradition as far as psak, as far as hanhaga. And very often students would ask him what his minig is, let's say, on matters of minhagim. So we'll get to some of the examples later on. He would say he has a family minig, or he comes from a community in Europe, but this was the minhag, this was the custom, but it doesn't necessarily apply to the students. Whatever their family minig is, whatever their fathers or their grandfathers did, that's what they should follow. The students would want to know, let's say, not an issue of minhag, an issue of psak halacha, let's say, does one wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed or not? So Rav Soloveitchik's family tradition was that he did not wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. But in Maimonides Yeshiva in Boston, I remember I davened there, all the students wore tefillin, and Rav Soloveitchik davened the minyan. He didn't wear tefillin. So how can it be? But he was their Rebbe? No. He felt that everyone should follow their family tradition. This is not a matter of minhag. This is not an issue of custom. This is an issue of din. Are you obligated to wear tefillin? Why are you forbidden? Or are you forbidden to wear tefillin or chalmot? So he said he felt that he was only the student's Rebbe in the area of giving a shiur, in the area of how they should analyze the Gemara, how they should approach the understanding of the Gemara. But as far as what the maskanas halacha l'mais is, he felt that each one, he didn't feel that he was their Rebbe in psak halacha, and he certainly didn't feel that he was their Rebbe, that he's going to give them their minhagim. Each one should follow their own family tradition. Well, the Marshal Rav Soloveitchik's family tradition was, these are just two of many instances, Rav Soloveitchik's family tradition was that in Ma'ariv, he would not recite the long section after Hashkiveinu Baruch Hashem Li'olam Amen V'Amen. So students would ask him after studying the Shia for several years, maybe they should adopt that practice as well. So he said, no, what do you have to do with me? This is my family tradition. He didn't do it because he figured out that that's the more correct thing to do. That was what his father did, that is what his grandfather did, that's what they did in Valojan Yeshiva, that was what the Vilna Gaon did. And his family tradition was that part of the family. The other part of the family had other traditions that he somehow succeeded in blending them together. But through his father's father, that part of the family, so they follow the traditions of the Vilna Gaon and Rav Chaim Volozhiner. So he said, the reason why he deletes Baruch Hashem Le'olam is because that's his family tradition. So you should do like I do. You should follow your family tradition like I follow my family tradition. Everyone should follow their family tradition. Rav Soloveitchik once pointed out a very fascinating thing. This year is the Shnas HaShmita in Eretz Yisrael. This is a sabbatical year when the farmers are not permitted to do any work on the farms. So there is a question whether this is really the Shnas HaShmita. The Chumash tells us in Vayikram, beginning of Parshas Behar, that every seventh year we have to declare as a Shmita year, and after 7 times 7, after a union of 49 years, the 50th year is the Jubilee year, the Yovel. And then you start again, another, you have units of 50, 50, 50, and the 50 years are divided into 7 times, and then the Shnas HaYovel. So the Talmud tells us that even if one lives at a time, Talmud says that towards the end of the period of the First Temple, when some of the tribes were already expelled from Eretz Yisrael, even though the government was still under Jewish control in Eretz Yisrael, so the laws of Yovel no longer applied, because the mitzvah of Yovel only applies when you have Kol Yoshvei HaOlam. When you have all of the Shvatim living in Eretz Yisrael, each one in their own makom, in their own section of Eretz Yisrael. So during the last few years of the Bais Rishon, the First Temple, they didn't observe the laws of Yovel. Nonetheless, the Talmud says that Desmond continued to count which year it is, and they would count the Yovel as a blank year to know that the Shemitah year will be pushed off another year. They don't count 777 Leon Avod, they only count 7 times, and then the 50th year was a blank year, and they didn't have to observe any aspects of Yovel. So the Rambam writes that in his opinion the same should apply today. We shouldn't simply count 777 Le'olam Vod and every seventh year is going to be Shemitah as we do. The Rambam says he thinks that that's not correct. We should count the 50th year as the Yovel, as a blank year, in order to push off the next unit of the Yovel, that Shemitah should be the next. Then the Rambam writes, however, the Gaonim who lived in Eretz Yisrael, and who were Gaonim who lived in Bavel, and they were the Rishivis, but Gaonim who lived in Eretz Yisrael, simultaneously, the Gaonim who lived in Eretz Yisrael did not think so, and they were the ones who were observing these laws. The Rambam says he lived in Chutz La'aretz. But the Gaonim who lived in Eretz Yisrael, who were observing the laws of Shemitah, did not think that you count the Yovel as a blank year. So he said, we have to give in and follow the view of the Gaonim and just count 7, 7, and every seventh year is Shemitah. And the Raivit has a comment on this Rambam. He thinks not so. He says he thinks that the Rambam is right, and we should pass him like the Rambam. Rav Soloveitchik once pointed out, to the best of his knowledge, and this is the only instance in the whole volume of the Rambam where the Rambam says you should not pass him like the Rambam, and the Raivit disagrees and he says, no, you have to pass him like the Rambam. The Rambam offers his opinion, and then he says, but the Gaonim say otherwise, and we're not allowed to follow my opinion. You have to follow the Gaonim. And the Raivit says, no, why follow the Gaonim? The Rambam is right, and you have to follow the Rambam. So the Rambam gives a reason. Why should we not follow what I just said? It makes so much sense. You should count the Yovel as a blank year, as the Talmud says, towards the end of the period of the First Temple, even though they didn't observe the laws of Yovel, but they still counted Yovel. Manu Yovelos, the Kadesh Shemitim, they counted the Yovel as a separate year in order to push off the next Shemitah. So the Rambam says, we have to follow the Gaonim, because they lived in Eretz Yisrael, and they were observing these laws. And he writes, HaMinhog, Bahamasoro, the actual practice, the tradition of how to keep the mitzvahs is an ikur. It's a very crucial factor in determining what the psak halacha is. He says, we lived in Chutz La'aretz, he lived in Egypt, wherever his family lived in Spain, wherever they lived, they never observed any laws of Shemitah. The people who lived in Eretz Yisrael, they were practicing these dinim, and that's the way they observed it, so there must be some explanation. He gives in, he doesn't know what it is. Rav Soloveitchik used to quote this Rambam on different occasions, and he used to stress this, that we have to have a masorah as far as psak halacha. We cannot just figure out on our own logically, we're going to study the Gemara and figure out on our own what we think the din should be. We have to have a tradition. Tradition has to be from one's Rebbe, who got it from a previous Rebbe, from a previous generation, and the Talmidim have to be kafuf, they have to be subservient to their Rebbe. I remember Rav Soloveitchik once told us a very startling story that really shook us out of our wits as far as the importance of being kafuf to a Rebbe. He said he remembered as a little child, he once visited, he was not brought up in Brisk, he was brought up in different communities. On various occasions he would visit with his grandfather Rav Chaim in Brisk. So on one occasion he was visiting in Brisk and he was sick as a little child. He said he probably had a strep throat. So he had a sore throat. So it was Friday night and they called in a Goyish doctor. So the doctor started that he didn't have a, what they call the light that they put into your mouth. He didn't have such a light, so they had a kerosene lamp there in the room. And the doctor was looking into his mouth. He said his father was there, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, his grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and the Dayan and Brisk was there, Rav Simcha Zelig Rieger. Rabbi Rieger was there also, Dr. Rieger's father, was the Dayan and Brisk. He was there as well on this occasion. So he remembered as a child the way the grandfather, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, asked the Goyish doctor, should we raise the light? Do you need some more light to see into the throat? So the Goyish doctor said, wouldn't be a bad idea. But he didn't say, yes, I need some more light. He said, wouldn't be a bad idea. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik told Rav Moshe Soloveitchik that the Rav's father turned the light on higher. So he said, what do you mean turn the light on higher? He says in Yiddish, it's the Shabbos. He didn't say that he needs the light. He asked him if he thinks that it's real. So he says, he remembers the way his grandpa got angry at his father, Rav Moshe, and he turned to the Dayan, Rav Simcha Zelig. And he says, he is an Amharetz, he said in Yiddish, er is an Amharetz. Because he's not listening to me, he doesn't understand. Shabbos, pikoch nefesh, you turn the light high. So he says, without batting an eyelash, Rav Simcha Zelig turned the kerosene lamp higher. In fact, Rav Chaim said, that's the din. So that's the din, you don't ask any kashas. I remember the way the Rav was telling us over this story was such a pachat chodin, that if the Rebbe says, that's the din, you don't ask any kashas. The Gemara has a whole discussion. Sometimes you have a right to ask a kasha. You have to listen to the Rebbe. Sometimes you have a right and an obligation to ask if you don't think that it's correct. Sometimes you have the right and obligation to ask in advance before you follow the Rebbe. And sometimes the halacha is, apparently this case was one of those instances, Abdinan uvda v'hadam asvina tiyufta. First you follow the psak, even if you think that it's wrong, even if it's lakula wrong, and then you discuss it later on, after you follow the psak. So Rav Soloveitchik, I think, was very, very strong on tradition, and he felt that we have to have traditions as far as psak halacha. I remember once one of the Talmidim just got married and he started putting on a talis. Most of the people don't wear talisim. I don't know what the practice here in Israel. Many communities they wear talisim when they're single also. And by many communities they only wear talis when they got married. So one of the boys just got married and he didn't know Bimas because he didn't know when you're supposed to wear the talis. Over your head, not over your head. Some communities they do wear over the head, others not. So yes, Rabbi Soloveitchik, what parts of the davening do you have to wear the talis over your head? So I remember the Rav started to lean back in his chair and he started to visualize in his mind his father, his grandfather, what parts of the davening did they wear the talis. So he says, start saying, when you say Kaddish, when the Chazan says Kaddish, and Shemona Esrei, and Kedusha, he was enumerating first, he was recalling, just reliving in his mind, when? And then he said, well, this is the Minhag, and then he was trying to figure out why that was so. It's not that he knew what the rule was, and then based on the rule, he tells you what the practice should be. He knew what the practice was. And he told the students, a few boys, man, he told the students what the practice was, where he came from, and then he was starting to figure out why that should be so. What the rule was based on the practice. The Mishnah in Egoyim has such a comment. The Mishnah tells that Rabbi Akiva had a tradition, Rabbi Lezer had a tradition from his Rebbe regarding one of the aspects of Tumas Tzaras. And Rabbi Akiva didn't understand why it should be so. He had a tradition regarding several aspects of the dinim, several dinim that seemed to him to be contradictory. So he asked his students, Rabbi Lezer asked his students, does anybody have any way to explain this? So Rabbi Akiva asked permission to give a suggestion. So Rabbi Lezer said, if you're going to give a suggestion which is going to contradict part of my tradition, I'm not interested. This is clearly my tradition. If you're going to give a suggestion that's going to be mekayem the tradition, that's going to explain the tradition that I have given you, so okay, then I give you permission. So Rabbi Akiva said, yeah, he has an explanation. Then he gave a whole explanation, and Rabbi Lezer accepted it. So that's, I think, the attitude that Rabbi Soloveitchik always used to go with. He would always try to follow the traditions that he had from his father, from his grandparents, from other Rabbanim in Europe, other Gedolim that he knew, and then he would try to understand what these traditions were based on. And in Psak Halacha, he would always try to figure out what would his father say in such a situation. In fact, it was interesting, in the yeshiva, one of the Talmidim was giving a hesed soon after Rav Soloveitchik passed away. So he told over a story that he once visited the Rav in his apartment in New York, and he walked into the room, and the Rav's mother was still alive. She was screaming at the Rav. So he was screaming at him, Beryl, apparently someone had asked the Rav a shayla, and he gave his opinion what the Psak should be. Some Isha one Yerideya. So the Rav's mother was a very learned woman. quite a learned woman. I seem to remember at her funeral when she passed away, so Rabban Soloveitchik gave a hesped at that occasion. So he mentioned that once a Balab Akoyan once came to the father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, to ask the Shaila regarding Tumas Koyhanim, whether the Tumah goes from one room to the other, and the Mishnais and Aholos are very complicated. The Yerideh, there's very little about that. They just tell you to look in the Mishnais and Aholos. Mishnais and Aholos are not so easy to read. So Rav Moshe Soloveitchik started to look it up, started to mish, and his wife was in the other room. Mrs. Soloveitchik was in the other room. So she came in with the Mishnayos, and she pointed to her, she showed her husband, she pointed to that Mishnah that had the answer to his psak, and she walked out of the room. She showed her husband, Rav Moshe, where the Mishnah was. Very hard Mishnayos there. She was quite an interesting, learned woman. So this student told over a story that he remembered on one occasion. He went into the Rav's apartment, he was staying by his mother in New York, and the mother was screaming at the Rav, Beryl, how did you issue such a psak? Your father would not have paskin like that. Tell the boy you made a mistake. Look it up in Shulchan Aruch, it must say Faker. I know your father would not have paskin like that. And that was what he usually used to have in mind, not only when he said the Shiva, but when he would have paskin, when he would paskin the Shaila also. What would my father or what would my grandfather have paskin on this particular instance? I'd just like to mention some of the various psokim. You know, it's not really earth-shattering psokim, but some of the easier psokim that Rav Soloveitchik had regarding different areas of halacha. I remember we were once discussing in Shir, also, one of the boys, on a different occasion, one of the boys had just gotten married, and he didn't know when he's supposed to recite the bracha. They don't know, be masters. He didn't know when he's supposed to recite the bracha when he put on a talus, because many people hold the talus in front of them, then they say the bracha, and then they put the talus behind them. Other people put the talus over, they do atifa first, and then as they're taking off the atifa and putting on the talus where they're going to wear it, normally they recite the bracha. So Rav Soloveitchik thought those were both improper practices. He thought that the bracha is supposed to be recited over, that's what he said his tradition was, over lasiyosam. And over means immediately before performing the mitzvah, not la'achar asiyosam, not after you've already begun observing the mitzvah, nor over the over, not too far in advance. So he said if you hold the talus in front of you, many people have this practice. If I'm not mistaken, I saw Rav Moshe Feinstein do that also. They held the talus, the yekkers all do like that. So they hold the talus in front of them, and they say the bracha on the side of the tzitzis, and then they put it behind them, and then they put it over their heads. So Rav Soloveitchik thought that that was clearly over the over, that's too far in advance of performing the mitzvah. And he mentioned the Shagasari has a tshuva. Shagasari is one of the few svarim of Achredim that he was very fond of. He used to quote often from that. In his published Divrei Torah, he quotes a lot from the Shagasari, from the Haschinach, he quotes a lot. He didn't use so many Achroinim, but the Shagasari was one of those that he did. In Europe, there was a practice, and until very recently, it was a practice in America also, that Bar Mitzvah boys would say Divrei Torah on the occasion of the Bar Mitzvah that were taken from the Shagasari. So the Rav said that as a child, he used to tutor other boys to teach them who were older than him. He was younger than Bar Mitzvah. He would teach boys who were erish becoming bar mitzvah chunks of the Shagasai that they would be able to recite, that they pulpulim that they would be able to recite on the occasion of their bar mitzvah. So he mentioned on this occasion the Shagasai has a tshuva about this, that it's not proper to put the talus over your head to do the atifa and then to recite the bracha afterwards when you're arranging the talus the way you plan to wear it while you're davening. That's already lachar asiyosim. One should recite the bracha over the talus as one is immediately prior to one. Being right before the person puts the talus over his head. I remember the Rav said his tradition was from Europe. I don't know exactly if this is a family tradition. He was brought up for a few years in his youth in a Lubavitcher community in Chaslavich. His father was the Rav there. So he said that this is a Lubavitcher practice in Europe. So he said his practice was, the halacha says you have to put on the shalyad before you put on the shalrosh. So his practice was he put on the entire shalyad, all of the krichos, including the krichos on the etzba, before he puts on the shalrosh. The common practice is not so. We follow what it says in the Magen Avraham, al pi sifri kabbalah, Rav Moshe Kudivero, that you only put on the krichos on the arm, and then you put on the shalrosh, and then you put on the krichos on the etzba. Rav Soloveitchik did not have that practice. He said that was the Lubavitcher practice in Europe. And he told us at that time this was based on the Mishkan Es Yankiv. That's also one of the few Sifri Achredim that he would quote by name. Mishkan Es Yankiv, of course, was a Litvish tshuva sefer. He was a Talmud of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. So the Mishkan Es Yankiv has a tshuva where he shows that many Rishonim, the Rishonim have a dispute when the Gemara says that the Ritzuas have to, how long does the Ritzuas have to be on the Shalyat? So the Gemara says the Ritzuas Shalyat has to be so long that it should be able to wind around the arm and wind around the finger. So some Rishonim say this is only telling you the length of the Ritzuas. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to actually put on the Ritzuas around your finger. You can fulfill the mitzvah of tefillin without a kriecha on the Ritzuah. Now the Rishonim say no. The Gemara is telling you that that's the way to fulfill the mitzvah. So if one doesn't fulfill the mitzvah of putting on the tefillin shalyad unless you wrap it around your finger, and the halacha says you have to put on the whole shalyad before you put on the shalosha, then you have to do the kriechas around the yetzba before. Rav Soloveitchik told us that on one occasion he was davening in a shul and he put on the tefillin the way he always did, and the balabos was watching him and he noticed that he didn't do it right. So he went over to him and he said, "But Rabbi Soloveitchik, you're supposed to put on, aren't you supposed to, yes, aren't you supposed to put on the shalosh before you put on the kriches on the yetzma?" So the Rav told us when we were learning Hilchos Tefillin, I didn't want to go confuse the person. So he said, "Oh yes, you're right, I made a mistake." That would be a very common practice by Rav Soloveitchik. If someone would ask him something, they would confront him about a certain practice that he had done, that it didn't correspond to what everybody else would say. So rather than give a whole Gettysburg address to explain why he does like this and he doesn't do like that, he would say, "Yeah, you're right, I made a mistake." He would say it's a misprint, or he would say something like that, just not to, if there would be students around who would understand what he had to say, he would explain. But if they weren't his students, just fall about him. So sometimes he wouldn't go into the next one. He would say, "Yeah, I made a mistake, you're right. Next time I'll try to keep it in mind." But he told us that was his practice following the Mishkan Es Yankiv, who explains in the Tshuva that this Mishkan Es Yankiv happens to be quoted by the Mishnah Brura also. It's interesting, Rav Soloveitchik very, very rarely used the Mishnah Brura. Very, very rarely quoted anything from the Mishnah Brura. Now the Mishnah Brura is very, very popular. But when Rav Soloveitchik was growing up, I imagine it was not so popular in his community. So I remember even when we studied Shulchan Aruch HaRachayim in the Yeshiva, Rav Soloveitchik was reading the text of the Shulchan Aruch inside. He would use the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, the Magen Avraham, and the Bi'ur Avraham. He wouldn't really use the Mishnah Brura. Or sometimes when he would give Shurim and Maria, sometimes in the Yeshiva, he would use the Shari Tshuva on the bottom of the page. He would use the big Shulchan Aruch. He wouldn't use the... He rarely, rarely ever mentioned anything from the Mishnah Brura. Didn't have anything against it, but just when he first learned Shulchan Aruch, he didn't use Mishnah Brura. So he rarely quoted. But it happens that the Mishnah Brura quotes this Mishkan Es Yankiv also, that one doesn't fulfill the mitzvah of Shalyad until one puts on the kriyachas around the yetzma, and therefore you have to do the whole Hanocha Shalyad before putting on the Shalosh. Rav Soloveitchik also had what people considered a very startling psak. It's a psak and a minig. It's not really an issue of the din. That one who is sitting shiva, of course, stays home, he doesn't go to shul. But as soon as the shiva is over, so the person goes to shul. So in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah writes on Minhag, which most Ashkenazim follow, that the ovel doesn't duchen. If the ovel is a kohen, he doesn't duchen. If it's an avelus for a parent, so the avelus lasts for the whole year, for 12 months, so the ovel, the meaning is the ovel doesn't duchen for the entire year. And if one is an avelus for a different relative with the observance of avelus only for 30 days, so the ovel doesn't duchen, he doesn't recite the Nesias Kapayim for the entire 30 days of avelus. So Rav Soloveitchik said that his minig was not so. That where he came from in Europe, minig was not so. So people would often look at Rav Soloveitchik, you know, many of his students would wonder, he's pulling something over on us. Is this really true? They never heard of such a thing. But if you look in the Svarim, Rav Shlomo LeVilna was a dayan in Vilna 100 years ago, and he has a whole attack against that Ramon. He says, he encourages the paskins that you should not follow that Ramon. Rav Soloveitchik had a lot of things that people considered irregular. People who only knew Shulchan Aruch considered irregular. But if you take a little broader perspective, if you look in other Svarim and other Acharonim, or you ask around what the meaning was in Europe, they weren't so irregular. Most of the things that he did that were different from the common practice today were not so rare. There were many places in Europe where they did these things. There was strong precedent, and these were his traditions. This was either his family tradition or the tradition that he got from Rabbanim in Europe, in Vilna and other communities where he spent time. A strange, startling thing, in most shuls, when the Baal Koreh reads Kriyas HaTorah, so we normally pronounce the name Yisachar, you only pronounce one shin of the two Yisachars. some have the practice that the first time you read the name, when the mother gave the child the name Yisachar, so she called him the name because Yisachar Sakharticha B'didoi B'ni, so some have the meaning that the first time they named Yisachar, and from then on you read the name in the Chumash Yisachar. And Rav Soloveitchik said that in Valajan the minig was that up until Parshas Pinchas they would pronounce it Yisachar, and from Parshas Pinchas on, from the end of Bamidbar till the end of the Torah, whenever the name appears, from then on you read it Yisachar. And this is named, this is based on a medrash where the which the Dazikain of Balei HaTosis quotes in the commentary on Chumash, that Yisachar had several children mentioned in the Chumash, and one of them was named Yov. The baby was born and gave the baby a name Yov. And a while after he gave the name Yov, somebody brought it to his attention of Yisachar, the son of Yankov Avinu. Yankov Avinu's grandson was named Yov. And the father of the baby, Yisachar, it was brought to his attention that Yov was the name of an Avodah Zarah that was in existence at that time, which he had never heard of. If he would have known that there's a Avodah Zarah by the name of Yov, he would never have named his child with that name. So he felt very bad about that. So he donated one shin from his name. His name was Yisachar. He had two shins. That's the way the Medrash goes. He donated one. He gave one of the shins of his name to his son to change the name from Yov to Yashuv. Because when you look in Parshas Pinchas, it mentions the children of Yisachar, and it says that one of his children's name was Yashuv. And Rashi in his commentary on Chumash writes, that's the same Cheverman who's mentioned earlier by the name Yov. It's the same person, Yov and Yashuv. Where did the Shini Hashem occur? So the Daz Kenim Balei HaTosis fills you in with this information, that after he came to the realization that Yov is the name of an Avodah Zarah, so he took one of the shins of his own name and he gave it away to his son, and from then on his son's name was Yashuv. So that was the reason for the meaning in Valoshan, that up until, from Chumash Bereshis through Chumash, up until Parshas Pinchas, you pronounce the name Yisachar, and from Parshas Pinchas on, the first time that the name Yashuv appears with the shin, so he gave away one of the shins, so now from then on you pronounce it Yisachar instead of Yisachar. So because the minhag olam was, most places in Europe, they would name Yisachar. They would read Yisachar from the beginning of the Torah to the end, only one shin. But in Valojin, the practice was they would read Yisachar until Pinchas. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik introduced in Boston, his base medrash in Maimonides, that he wasn't so convinced that we should only follow the one practice or the other. So he would have the Balkari lane whenever the name Yisachar appears. He would have him lane the pasuk twice. They read it once with the Yisachar, once with the Yisachar, up until Parshas Pinchas. And from Pinchas on, then it was easier. Then he would just read the Yisachar with one shin. There were two traditions in Europe, and he wanted to follow both of the traditions. Or I remember once I happened to be in Boston on Shabbos Parshas Maaseh. So on Shabbos afternoon, by Mincha, they were late in Kriyas HaTorah. So the Baal Kori prepared until Sheni. What then? You only late until Sheni? And Monday and Thursday morning, you late Parshas Avot until Sheni, Parshas HaShemot. So they called me up for Shlishi. So the Baal Kori lanes till Sheni, and then he stopped, and then I was about to recite the Bracha Shenasan Lono. So Rav Soloveitchik said, no, just a minute, you have to lane for Shlishi. So Baal Kori hadn't prepared for Shlishi. He can't lane, I'm prepared. So he asked, is there anybody else who knows the truck? Someone else volunteered, someone else read from Sheni to Shlishi, and then he said, okay, now you can say the Bracha Shenasan Lono. So I said the Bracha. And afterwards they asked him, my high, what happened all of a sudden? Since when do you lane till Shlishi? The meaning always is, you just lane till Sheni. Shabbos afternoon to Mincha, you lane till Sheni. Monday, Thursday morning, just lane till Sheni. So he said, no, in Brisk, he remembers that he once visited in Brisk, and in Brisk the meaning was, Parshas Dvorim is always during the 9 days, always right before Tisha B'Av. And the Pasuk in Yeshayah tells us, Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh, that Yerushalayim b'gula, in Eretz Yisrael, will take place when we will have Hamadas Dayanim. Talmud complains about the corrupt Dinei Torah, that if you have Rabbanim who don't pass in Dinei Torah honestly, with justice, so we don't deserve any Geula. And when we will have proper Hamadas Dayanim, when we will have proper Dinei Torah, and justice will be followed, then the Geula will occur. So that section in Dvarim, Parshas Dvarim, between Sheni and Shlishi, speaks about Hamadas Dayanim. That's when Moshe Rabbeinu tells Bnei Yisrael that my father-in-law Yisro came and he said we should institute the system of Dayanim, And he appointed Sari Hameir, Sari Hamishim, and he told them they should pass him properly, and they should judge the people honestly, and they shouldn't take any sheichat, unless Akir upon him Amishpah, they should judge everybody equally, and so on. They shouldn't show any favoritism to anybody. So Rav Soloveitchik said that because that Parsha's Dvarim always falls out right before, immediately before Tisha B'Av, the meaning of Brisk was, based on the Pasuk in Yeshaya, that Tzion B'Mishpah Tipadeh, that we should stress Hamadas Dayanim in a proper fashion. So the minig was that he used to lane up until Shlishi. In the rest of the world, they didn't have such a minig. They just lane until Sheni. But he said, since he saw that minig by his grandparents, by his grandfather in Brisk, so he wants to preserve that minig in his Beis HaMedrash. He didn't recommend that they should do it all over the world. He said, that was his, that's the minig that he saw. And that was the minig that he wanted to follow. This year happens to be a Shnas HaShemitah. Rav Soloveitchik said in the name of his father, Moshe Soloveitchik, that he felt that the Heter Mechira that they follow in Eretz Yisrael was not acceptable. And he had such a startling reason why. He had a difficult passage. There are many difficult passages in the Rambam. There's one difficult passage in the Rambam which Rav Moshe Soloveitchik interpreted as saying the following, that Eretz Yisrael today belongs to the whole Klal Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael from the days of Avraham Avinu till the days of Yeshua Ben Nun belonged to the whole Klal Yisrael. Then Yeshua ben Nun made a chalukah, he divided Eretz Yisrael among the different shvatim, and then within every shevet he divided it among the families, and then among the individual people, and everyone got a field, a house, a section of land. After the Churban Bayis Rishon, so there is a principle of kibush melchama. Whenever one nation wages war against another nation, so the conquering nation causes all of the people to lose their ownership. So all of the individual people lost their ownership of the various houses or the various farms that they had owned before the Churban Bayis Rishon. Did Eretz Yisrael become the ownership of the conquering nation? So that not. Although there is an international rule, the Talmud develops this idea based on Sukkim and Chumash, although there is an international rule of Kibush Melchama, it doesn't apply fully to Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael was promised to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov with the priest's bris, with the covenant, that it will always belong to the Klal Yisrael, it can never be taken away. However, this priest's bris, as Rav Soloveitchik said, the Chazon Ish has the exact same thing, word for word. The Kriis's Bris was never made with any individual people. It was only made with the Klal Yisrael as a nation. So at the occasion of the Churban Bayis Rishon, the individual people who had plots of land in Eretz Yisrael lost their ownership. But it didn't become the ownership. Eretz Yisrael did not, Chalila, become the property of the Babylonian soldiers, of the Babylonian government that won the war now. It reverted back to the ownership of Klal Yisrael, like before Yeshua ben Nun made the Chalukah, like Yerushalayim was never divided. The Talmud says Yerushalayim is Chalukah l'Shvatim. They weren't supposed to divide Yerushalayim to the various Shvatim. So Yerushalayim always belonged to Kol Shifteichem, it belonged to the entire Klal Yisrael. So after the Churban Bayis Rishon, Eretz Yisrael belonged to the entire Klal Yisrael as a nation. Then Rav Moshe Soloveitchik pointed out, a Chalukah was never done again. In the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, when they came back to Eretz Yisrael, and they built the Bayis Sheni, they never made another Chalukah. So the whole period of the Bayis Sheni, the whole period now, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik thought that Eretz Yisrael belongs to the whole Klal Yisrael. So he thought that that doesn't lend itself. Yerushalayim is not for sale, and Eretz Yisrael is not for sale. He thought the Torah tells us that if I own a jacket, I can sell it. I own a piece of paper. I own a tape recorder, I can sell it. If I own a field, I own a house, I can sell it. But if Klal Yisrael owns property, that Klal Yisrael can sell Eretz Yisrael. So he thought there's no pasuk in the Torah that such a thing exists. A private people can sell, but a whole Klal Yisrael should be able to sell Eretz Yisrael to somebody else. He thought that there is no such institution. So he said his father was opposed. There was a whole people in Europe for the last 100 years. The Heter Mechira started over 100 years ago, that if you sell Eretz Yisrael to the Arabs, then for the year of Shemitah, so you don't have to observe, many were Mekel and there were those who were Machmer, you don't have to observe some of the laws of Shemitah. So there were pros and cons, whether yes or no, but no one ever said such a startling thing that the sale is not valid, that you can't, it doesn't lend itself to be sold. Even the Chazon Ish, who was the most opposed, he never had this einfall, he had a different idea. The Netziv was opposed, there were many Gdolim who were opposed. Beis HaLevi was opposed to the Heter Mechira, they had different reasons why they were opposed, different halachic reasons. But this einfall was really startling, that the whole Eretz Yisrael doesn't lend itself, it's not for sale. Eretz Yisrael cannot be sold because it's not the private property of any individual person. It belongs to the whole Klal Yisrael, and there's no such institution as sale on such an ownership. This is what he said in the name of his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. in Eretz Yisrael, they do rely, many people do rely on a Het HaMechira. It's interesting, Rav Soloveitchik used to tell the students about that also. The Poskim who developed the Het HaMechira, this whole idea that if you sell a land to the Arabs, so some of the laws of Shemitah may be avoided. You can be makel on some of the laws of Shemitah. So the Gedolim who developed this Heter over a century ago said, because it was considered a Shas Adchak. It's a Shas Adchak. Therefore they said the people can rely on this Heter. As the years keep on going on, many Rabbani keep on insisting it's not a Shas Adchak. When Rabbi Gordon was the chief rabbi, he used to supervise the Heter Mechira. And after he retired from the chief rabbinate, he thought that it's no longer Shas Adchak. He didn't see why the chief rabbinate continues to sell Eretz Yisrael to the Yav. He doesn't think that there's that much of a Shas Adchak that they should sell everything. A lot of people sell their gardens to the Arabs in order to be able to have the flowers grow. So that's a Shas Adchak, that you should sell a garden in order to be able to grow flowers. A Shas Adchak is if you have a kibbutz and you're going to make millions of dollars or whatever selling the food. The people have to eat food. They have to keep business. They have to make a parnassah. Those heist a Shas Adchak. Shas Adchak for flowers. It's a shvach a Shas Adchak. So this heter was only for Shas students who would ask him. He doesn't think it's right for American Jews to rely on the Heter Mechir. He said, if we live in America, the Shiloh was posed to him by the Kashrus division of the OU. Should the OU endorse products from Eretz Yisrael that relied on the Heter Mechir? And if you wouldn't hold that the Heter Mechir is valid, these products would not be muta b'achila. One would not be allowed to eat them. So Rashi thought that what's the Shas Adchak? That in America we should also rely on Het Mechira. Those who live in Eretz Yisrael have no Breira. They have to sell the products to Chutz Lotz also. So let them sell it to Russia. Let them sell it to Africa. Let them sell it somewhere else. Why should the Jews in America rely on the Het Mechira? If a Jew from America visits Eretz Yisrael, so how long is he? If he's going to visit Eretz Yisrael for a year, if you have children studying in Eretz Yisrael for a year, that's one thing. So maybe that's a Shas Adchak. But just visiting in a hotel for a week or two, so why should you choose to go to a hotel where they rely on the Heter Mechira? Go to a hotel where they don't. What do you have to rely on the Heter Mechira? Just for 1 week? But for 2 weeks? What's the Shas Adchak? So he thought that it's not so kosher. He was not so keen on the Heter Mechira in the first place because of what his father said. His father threw such a damper on the whole idea. this paper, the Mizrahi would always carry an advertisement that Rabbi Soloveitchik said that this year, as every year, it's more proper the Ben Shesrig and an Esrig purchased the Meretz Yisrael, and he would explain why in Yeshiva. There were those who felt that since the farmers in Eretz Yisrael during the Shemitah year, many of them relied on the Hetter Mechira, and they were doing things, they were keeping their Pardes. newspaper, the Mizrahi would always carry an advertisement that Rabbi Soloveitchik said that this year, as every year, it's more proper to Ben Shestrik and an Esther purchased the Meretz Yisrael, and he would explain why in Yeshiva. There were those who felt that since the farmers in Eretz Yisrael during the Shemitah year, many of them relied on the Het Mechira, and they were doing things. They were keeping their Pardesim locked. They were preventing everybody from taking these Esrogim. This is the whole merchandise. This is the whole Parnasa. So if the laws of Shemitah apply, you're supposed to leave all of the fields open in Hefker and let everybody who wants take it. And they were if you don't open the Het Mechira, so the farmers were in violation of these laws of Shemitah. And there is a din. There's one opinion in Tosfos, and the last daf in Yevamos, that there's a question whether such a din exists. So there's one opinion in Tosfos, the Rabbi Natam, not Stam an opinion, the Rabbi Natam is of the opinion that if one kept the gates of his pardes, his orchard, locked, and he didn't allow anybody to come in and take any of the food becomes also bachil, and no one's allowed to eat it. So if one should not hold from the Het Mechira, which Rasulovich basically didn't hold from, and the Esrogim, where they kept the Pardesim locked, are also Bachila. And the Gemara tells us that you cannot use for the mitzvah of Esrog an Esrog which is also Bachila. It has to be an Esrog sheyesh bo heter achila, has to be kosher. Because the Torah describes it as a pre-eitzada, it has to be pre. So the Rambam explains the Gemara, pre means that it's a kosher pre. If it's a tray for pre, so that's not called an Esrog, that's not called a pre-eitzada. So the question was, if you don't hold from the Het Mechira and the farmers kept their gates locked so that no one should be able to take their pardesim, this is their diamond, this is worth fortune, they charge a fortune for these esrogim, so then it should come out that you cannot use the esrogim on Mitzvah Shviz. So Rabbi Soloveitchik would always say, no, he doesn't agree, he thinks that that's not correct. The halacha that states that you're not permitted to use a treife esrog for the mitzvah of lulav, for the mitzvah of dalam, means if it's treif, if it's orlo, if it's a treif esrog, but if you kept your gates locked, and the Rabbi Tam says you're not permitted to eat it, that's called mishumar. You're not permitted to eat those peiros that you didn't allow the people to take, those peiros that you weren't mafkir. It's not that the peiros become treif. By eating the peiros later, you only have these peiros because you kept the gates locked. And if you're going to be nene from that, you're going to eat the peiros. So then it's demonstrating that you not only you kept the gates locked, you even made money on it. You're getting hanor from the avera that you did. So that's a continuation of the violation of shmira. That's why. That's why they hold that you're not allowed to eat it. But it's not that it's a treif esrog. So therefore he thought that even if one should not hold from the whole Het Mechira, and one should feel that the farmers were all in violation of the mitzvah of shmita by not being mafke de peiros, the esrog would still be acceptable for the mitzvah of Dalad Minim. For the sukkahs following. This sukkah there was no problem, but for the sukkahs of Motzoi Shemitah is going to be the question. And then they would always have in the newspapers that the Satmar Rebbe, they would have on the same page, the Morgen Journal would make money, they would have on the same page an advertisement from the Satmar that this year especially you're not permitted to use an esrog from Eretz Yisrael. It would be signed by the Rabbi Yoel Teitelbaum, the Satmar Rebbe, because the farmers were all in violation of the laws of Shemitah, and it's Meshumar, and it's Treife Esrogim, and therefore you're not allowed to use a Treife Esrog as it says in the Gemara. You have to have an Esrog as a Heter Achila. So they have these two advertisements in the Yiddish newspaper, one next to the other. We often have the tendency to speak of Rabbonim who were involved in Paskinik Shailas, Maru Haru and Poskim, to speak of them and to divide them into different categories that some were Mekel and some were Machmer. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein is known as a great Mekel, the Maharsham. Maharsham is known as a very great Mekel from 80-90 years ago. Where would we place Rav Soloveitchik? Should we describe him as a Mekel or a Machmer? I don't really think he was either a Mekel or a Machmer. I don't think he had tendencies in either direction. He would just develop the ideas based on the Gemara. His style of working out a shaila, psak halacha, would be the traditional classical litvish style. There's a very different style in working out a psak halacha by the galitziana, by the polish. They go sort of backwards. If you have a case that's brought to you, so you look in the literature of the shaylas and tshuvas and you fish around for another case that's similar, and you try to draw an analogy whether this is sufficiently similar to have the same psak as the other case, or it's sufficiently dissimilar to have a different psak from the other case. This is the Galatian and the Poivish style. And the literacy style is the other way. You go from the beginning, you go from the top to the bottom rather than go backwards. So Rav Soloveitchik had that style. He would go back to the Chumash and go to the Mishnayos and go to the Gemara and look through the research, the whole topic, look through the Gemara with the Rishonim, and then try to figure out based on the Shulchan Aruch what we paskin. And that would be the way the Pesach would be. He hardly ever used Achreinim, unless there were some traditional tshuvas that he had. No one uses all the Achreinim. Even those who like to look at Achreinim, Rav Avadya Yosef uses all of the Achreinim. He should be well and live for many, many years. He likes to quote everything. A dying wife from Neda Haredes used to consult with others, and they would tell him every single Achreinim had anything to say on the topics, so he would pad his tshuvas. He would write everything in the tshuvas and discuss what everybody has to say. But most people don't quote. The Galatianic quote the Galatian Achreinim, the Litvashi quote Litvashim. So Rabbi Soloveitchik had his Achreinim that he used the Mishkanus Yankev, he used the Netziv, his great-grandfather. He used the certain tshuvas and Achreinim that Malbusha Yontev he was familiar with, some of the others, Minchas Baruch. Some of those from his family are those that that were traditional in the Litvish yeshivas, and the others he wouldn't use. Mishmachoyev to use all of the Achreinim. So he would have the classical traditional style of working out like the Litvish tshuvas, working out a topic from the Gemara through the Rishonim, and then to try to ascertain what the Pesach Halach is. If anything, if one is to declare Rabbi Soloveitchik as either a Machmer or a Mekel, in my humble opinion, I think he was very much of a Machmer. I think he was much more of a Machmer than he was of a Mekel. He had a family tradition which stems all the way back. The Mishnah Brura has this a lot, but they didn't get it from the Mishnah Brura. The Mishnah Brura has it from the Hasidic Ashkenaz. This was a tradition for many. Not everybody had this tradition, but this tradition existed from a period from the Bali Atesis and from the Rekeach and from Rabbi Yudah Chassid. They had a certain style of psak to try to be choshish for all of the opinions. And in Rav Soloveitchik's family, they had such traditions, and he continued with these traditions, and he added on many more chumas of his own to try to be choshish for many opinions, just to give some examples of his. So, Lamasha, this year, Erev Pesach is going to fall out on Shabbos. So the shaila is, what do you do for Shalosh Shudas? What do you eat? What do you eat? If you're going to be eating chametz chalas, the women are not going to be too thrilled. But how are they going to get rid of the chametz? They're going to wash it down. It's going to go down the drain. What are you going to do with the chametz? Matzah you can't eat because you're not allowed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. And the chametz is going to be a problem. What are you going to do? So many people, it says in the Tosfos that it says in the Shulchan Aruch, you're not permitted to eat matzah which you can fulfill your mitzvah with on Pesach night. But egg matzah, which you cannot use, matzah shira, what we call, egg matzah, which you're not allowed to use for Leil Pesach for the mitzvah, so that you're permitted to use all you want on Erev Pesach. And even though we have a practice, many Yom Achma, like the Shulchan Aruch says, that you're not supposed to eat egg matzah during Pesach, only for young children or older people who can't eat the regular matzah, but in Erev Pesach there's no such chumra. So a lot of people use egg matzahs on Erev Pesach. So Rav Soloveitchik, whenever this would come out, not too often, the last time it happened was 13 years ago. My son was born right before Erev Pesach Chaliz B'Shabbos. By the Shalom Zoch, they told us the next time, we live in Washington Heights, so the Yekis know the Luach by heart. So they said the next time that it's going to be Erev Pesach Chaliz B'Shabbos is going to be by his Bar Mitzvah. So my son is going to be Bar Mitzvah this year, 13 years later. So Rav Soloveitchik, whenever it would come out, Erev Pesach Chaliz B'Shabbos, and he would be discussing in the Shir, in the Yeshiva, or Maria, by the Baal HaBatim. So he would go through this topic, and then he would explain, but according to the Rambam's opinion, egg matzah can be used for Leil Pesach for the Seder. He says, we don't pass like the Rambam, but the Rambam's opinion is that it's only called matzah ashira if you mixed in milk, honey, what else the Gemara says? Cholav advash yayin or shemen, wine or oil. But if you mixed in any other meperos, as egg matzah has other things in it, apple cider and eggs, I think. So then, according to the Rambam, you can use egg matzah for the Seder. So even though we don't pass like the Rambam lahokel, to use egg matzahs to the Seder, you don't even eat egg matzahs the whole Pesach, many amachna, but to allow you to be mekel against the Rambam, to eat egg matzah on Erev Pesach, no, you didn't think that was right. You have to be machna for the Rambam, that egg matzah is a kosher, a matzah, lama hadron, you can eat it Pesach, no? So he recommended that we shouldn't do that. You should eat chametz, you should eat regular chametz, which is much more difficult for the balabastas. Or it's famous now in the Sfarim, they print about Rav Chaim Soloveitchik's unique form of tkiyas. There are different opinions in Tosfos as to how many truas you have to blow. When you blow on Rosh Hashanah, so do you blow 9 times, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, or do you blow only 3 times? Rashi says 3 times and Tosfos says 9 times. So based on how many truas you have, that anachloik is how long the Sfarim has to be. the shvarim have to be teru, teru, teru. Each one should have a minimum of 3 trumitin, the length of 3 mashahus long, and the sum total of all the 3 truas should be 9 trumitin. Oh no, adarab, if you go, according to Rashi, if you're going to blow teru, 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 there's going to be 3 tkiyas. There's going to be 3 tkiyas. You have to blow shorter, because according to Rashi, a tru is 2 to 2, 3 mashahus. And a tkiyah is the length of the whole trua. So if you're going to blow 2, that's already a tkiyah according to Rashi. So in order that it should be called the shvarim, it has to be very, very short. So it has to be like 2 trumitin, very short. So you have to take a stand of it. You do like Rashi, like Tosis. So we know, we all do like Tosis. Everybody blows 9 truas, and everybody blows 3 shvarims, tuhu, tuhu, tuhu. We know what we do. So Rav Soloveitchik, as a child, I was told before Bar Mitzvah, asked his father, why can't we solve all the problems and follow both Rashi and Tosfos? And he gave a whole etzah how to solve both. So his father said, hey, that's a nice idea. He's going to ask his father, he's going to ask Rav Chaim. So he sent a letter, they had no telephone, I don't know what he's talking. He sent a letter to Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim liked the idea that the Rav suggested as a child before Bar Mitzvah. He liked the idea and he adopted it. And in Brisk, it was known, it was a Dovi Yadua, that Rav Chaim used to blow the 5 short shvarim. Instead of blowing tuhu, 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 he blow tuhu, 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 5 times to satisfy both Rashi and Tosfos's opinion. That according to Rashi, if it's going to be tuhu, then it's going to be a tkiyah, so it's too long, so you have to make it very short. But you just have 3 short ones, so you haven't satisfied Tosfos, because Tosfos has to have the sum total of the shvarim, has to be the minimum length of 9 trumitin. This is interesting, that this suggestion is known as Rav Chaim's tkiyahs. As Rav Chaim's tkiyahs, last year in Yeshiva, they asked me to write for one of the publications Rav Soloveitchik's Minhogim for Rosh Hashanah. So I wrote, not knowing, I wrote that Rav Soloveitchik's practice was that he would blow shofar in accordance with Rav Chaim's tradition, that he would blow the 5 short shvarims instead of the 3 regular shvarims. So I asked one of the members of the family to read it over to make sure that it's accurate. I showed it to Rabbi Meir Twersky, he's one of the rabbis in the yeshiva, so he said everything was accurate except for that line. He says, he asked the members of the family, and they said it's just the reverse. Not that the Rav followed Rav Chaim's tears. Rav Chaim adopted it from the Rav when he was a young child. He came up with his own father, he should be 80, they call Ashitas, and the Rav Chaim adopted. This was one of the this is one of the things that the Rav introduced chumis. It introduced a lot of chumis. For example, there is a dispute on the topic of tkiyas. There is a dispute in Shulchan Aruch and the Rishonim, the commentaries on the Gemara, when you blow tkiyah shvarim trua tkiyah tashrat and Rosh Hashanah, whether the shvarim trua should be b'neshima achas or b'shtei neshimas. Should you blow tuhu 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 tu 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 tu, or you should blow tuhu tuhu tuhu, then inhale a little bit and then blow tu 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 tu. So the Shulchan Aruch recommends we should follow both opinions. So these are Mechaber rights, you should blow half of the tkiyas the miyush of one way and the tkiyas the miyum of the other way. So that's what many people do. So Rav Soloveitchik said that he, I'm not sure whether he said this is his family tradition or this was his own suggestion, that Me'ikar Adin were really passing that it should really be B'Nishim Achas. So all of the Tashrats, from the beginning to the end, he blows B'Nishim Achas, and the Tashrat, all the Tashrats means the tkiyas the miyush of before you begin Musa. Then the tkiyas in the middle of the Shtila Shmon Esrei, that was his grandfather's practice, Rav Chaim, and his father's practice. He used to blow shofar in the middle of the Shtila Shmon Esrei. By the Ashkenazim, usually we don't do that. By the Sfardim, they do it, and by the Chassidim, they do it. And one of the big Chassidish Rebbe, Davnei Nezer, writes in his tshuva, he says he doesn't like the whole thing, but he says, what can I do? I'm a Chassidish Rebbe, that's what I do for a living. So I got to follow the Chassidish Menhagim. He asked the Bob the tkiyas in the middle of the Shtila Shmon Esrei, but he says if he weren't a Chassidish Rebbe, he wouldn't like the whole thing. That's what he does for a living. So Rav Soloveitchik was fakir. He wasn't a Chassidish Rebbe at all. He was a mistake, but that was his family tradition. He said the Rav said that Rav Chaim in his private minion in Brisk would blow tkiyas in the Shtila Shmon Esrei. In the big shul, he wouldn't do it because he felt he would confuse the whole oilam. It is very confusing. When you blow shofar in a big crowded shul on Rosh Hashanah in the middle of the quiet Shmon Esrei, everybody's thrown off kilted, no one knows where in the world you're holding. But if it's a small minion, mehecha teis. So Rav Soloveitchik's practice was they would blow in the tkiyas the miyushov, in the shtila shmona esrei, in the chazoras hashat, they would blow the tashrats, all the tashrats would be b'neshima achas. And that was ready 90 kolos. And then according to the minig of Rav Ho'olam, all you have left are 10 kolos. So Rav Soloveitchik would introduce, no, they all know in yeshiva, Rav Soloveitchik blows 102 kolos. The whole world blows mea kolos, 100 kolos, that's what the minig that Tosfos quotes. Rav Soloveitchik blows 102. Why? because at the end of the davening, in the middle of the Kaddish, the Skabal, after Musaf, he would blow three times Tashrat, the Shtei Neshimas, in order to satisfy that other opinion that he really didn't feel was Mikra Din. Until Mikra Din, we pass can really be Neshim Achas. But there are some Rishonim at the end of the Gemara Sukkah, there are a group of Rishonim who say that it has to be Dafti B'Shtei Neshimas. So you blow three Tashrats, rather than blow Tashrat, Tarat, you blow three times Tashrat, which would be B'Shtei Neshimas, and in that way it added up to the sum total of 120. So this is Gor Chumras, these were loads and loads of Chumras. Or Rav Soloveitchik in the Nusach of the Shmon Esri, not only his private Nusach, he told the Chazan who recited the Chazaras HaShatz to say the Nusach like that. The 10th Pasuk in the Zichronos and in the Shofros is a Machloikis in Poskim when it's supposed to be mentioned. Our practice and the standard Machzorim is that we recite 9 Psukim in the Tfilah of Zichronos and Shofros in the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. And then the 10th Pasuk is mentioned when you say, L'keir L'keir Seinu, Zochem is the current Tovel of Anachon, and then you quote the 10th Pasuk in the middle of that section. You don't quote the 10th Pasuk immediately following the 9 Psukim. You pause and you say a Tefillah in the middle of that concluding paragraph, you incorporate the final Pasuk. But there are other Pasuk who say that that's not right, that you should really say the 10th Pasuk immediately following the 9th Psukim. So Rav Soloveitchik would recommend to the Balei Tefillah, this he would many things he would not recommend to others, that would be his private practice. And other things he would recommend to the Talmidim and have his Baal Tefillah do like this. This he had his Baal Tefillah do. To say the 10th Pasuk twice, immediately right after the immediately following the 9th Psukim, and then to repeat it again in the middle of the concluding paragraph in the Shmon Esrei. This is quite a chumra. Or, I remember a few years ago we were once discussing in Yonim of Chanukah, so Rabbi Luchstein mentioned he remembered the way the Rav said in Shir, and he has that practice also. When you recite Halal and Shul along with the Chazan, so Rav Soloveitchik pointed out there's going to be a bit of a problem. The Chazan is going to say the Brocha, Asher Kedeshanu B'Mitzvah Yisrael Tzivanu L'Kroas HaHalal. Everybody's going to answer Amen. And then we're going to repeat the Brocha, we're going to say again. So some Paskim hold that if you said Amen to the Chazan's Brocha, you're Yotzi, even though you didn't have in mind to be Yotzi. If you have in mind explicitly not to be Yotzi, then you're not Yotzi, but most of the people will not have explicit kavanah shalolot, since they won't be thinking about it one way or the other. So since there are some pasuk mahol that you yotzei if you answer amen even without kavanah lotzeis, the Rav Soloveitchik used to practice and he recommended that others should do it as well. He would recite the bracha over the halal along with the chazan and finish a little before the chazan. The chazan says across the halal, you'll be able to say amen like everybody else, to answer amen with the chazan bracha, and then to continue to say halal. These are real chumras. These are real comments to Shulchan Aruch. None of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch have these things. People want to know if Rabbi Soloveitchik was Machmir Lekach.
I don't think he was either, but if anything, I would put him in the camp with the Machmirim. Or Rav Luchstein pointed out years ago, we were discussing about there is a Machloikis when the second Brochan Hadlokas Neres Chanukah should be recited. The Lahadlik Ner Shal Chanukah is a Birchas HaMitzvah that has to be recited over Las Yosim before you do the Mitzvah. What about Shosa Nisim? What kind of a bracha is that? Is that also like a Birchas HaMitzvah, which should be recited over Las Yosim in advance before you begin to light the candles? Or not at all? Maybe that's a bracha, Birchas HaRaya. The Talmud tells us that one who sees Ner Chanukah, one who doesn't have his own home. We have a lot of people like that today, the homeless. So one who doesn't have a fellow who sleeps in the park, one of those people, so if he passes by someone's home and he sees a Ner Chanukah, so you should recite the bracha Shosa Nisim. So maybe when I light candles at home, my reciting of the Bracha Shasam Nis, maybe it's also B'Toyras Haroya Ner Chanukah, maybe it's not B'Toyras Madlik. So the Netziv, the Rav's great-grandfather, points out that this is a Machloikis among the Rishonim, the commentaries on the Gemara, what's the nature? He has two opinions in Rashi and in Shulchan Aruch. He points out, it's not that clear that the Netziv points it out in his commentary on Shilton, said this is a Machloikis. But the Ramos says that we recite the both Brachas before. So Rav Soloveitchik said, this was his father's. He got this from his father. I don't know whether he got it from his father, but he said his father recommended to him that on the first night we only light one candle, so you have no choice. You have to follow the Ramah. So you say the both brachas. You say all three brachas. Lahadlik Ner Shal Chanukah and Shasam Nisim Mishachyon. You say all the three brachas before you light that one candle. But on the second night through the eighth night, where you have more than one candle, so Rav Soloveitchik said his practice is to follow his father's tradition that the Lahadlik Ner Shal Chanukah you say before you light the first candle, but then light one candle, then say Shasam Nisim Lavasein, and then light the next candle. So if it's supposed to be Oivalas Yosam, so you got it. it's before you light the next candle. If it's supposed to be Birchas Haroya, you're reciting the bracha over the candle that you see, so you have that too. You lit the first candle, so it's both Oyvel Asiyosim and Le'achar Asiyosim. This is a wild chumra. These are all wild chumras. No one in Shulchan Aruch suggests this, but these are along the lines of the chumras that the Mishnah Berurah in the tiny letters has all the time. The Bir Alach and the Mishnah Berurah has always. He always recommends you should be chayshish for this opinion, chayshish for that opinion. You should always do things in such a way that you should be eitzi yedei kol hashipas.
First of all, I changed my minhag in after
No, there were those who had objections to Rav Soloveitchik's practice that it may not be 100% always gehalt. Okay. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it there, this idea of being Yotze Yedei Kol Hashitos, which the Rav tried to do, and many try to do these things in general, it applies in general if you can satisfy, but it doesn't apply, I understand, with Beishama and Beisila. I wonder, what's the reason for that?
The Poskim, I have a long essay about that. The Poskim point out that whenever it's Oiz Gepaskin to the Gemara already, Beferish, against one Shita, then there's no Hidur even to be Oitze that Shita. So it's not only Beishamai, the Talmud said Beishamai B'mach Mesilla and Mishnah, the Gemara in the first Perek in Masechas need even have it by other Tanoim, who are all within Beishilo. If it's Itmer Hilchas Elahedya, if it's Oiz Gepaskin Beferish against one Shita, so then you're not, there's no Kiyum, there's no Hidur at all, there's no Minas Chasidus to be Oitze that. But we're dealing with things that are really machloikis rishonim, and we never had a clear-cut psak, just the practice is one way. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik would often be choshesh for all of the opinions. It's interesting though, there are some practices that Rav Soloveitchik's father and grandfather and great-grandfather had that he did not follow, and he said he didn't feel that he was up to it. These are midas chasidus, this is a different thing. For example, the Netziv has in his Tshuvas Meshiv Dover, and Rav Soloveitchik said his father and his grandfather had this practice also, that today we don't have any tchelas. Some people do wear tchelas, and it's a question whether they have the authentic tchelas or not. So most people wear tzitzis that only has lavon, that doesn't have any tchelas. In the Talmud there is a dispute, there is a machlokes hatanaim, whether one is in fulfillment of the mitzvah if you only have tzitzis with lavon without having any tchelas. So one Tana is of the opinion, you're not yet to anything. You haven't fulfilled any mitzvah at all. So in Gantz are brachal of atola, and the strings are meaningless. And you may as well wear the garment without strings. There's nothing, no kima mitzvah. We don't follow that opinion of Rebbe. That's Rebbe's opinion. We follow the view of the Chachamim that tcheles enim akevis es halovon, halovon enim akevis at tcheles. If all the strings are tcheles, all the strings are white, you're yotze partially. You're yotze the mitzvah, the mitzvah. So you're not yet fully yotze unless you have the proper proportion of lovon and tcheles, but you're yotze the mitzvah partially. So the Maharam Rutenberg, the Rebbe of the Rosh, the Maharam Rutenberg had a midas chasidus that I think disappeared over the years and all of a sudden popped up again. By the now there's so many sittim that don't have maravis, but apparently then everybody used to use a machzor on Yom Tovim, and the machzorim all had the maravis printed, so he felt compelled to show. These were the two instances that he said that sort of a compromise, but he said his father told him that that's the way you have to make a compromise in this situation. These are some of the aspects of the style of Psak Halacha that Rav Soloveitchik used to have. I'm sure this is absolutely not exhaustive. There are many, many, many more, hundreds of instances of Psak Halacha, many that are much more significant than the ones that I spoke of. There are many that Rav Soloveitchik wrote Tshuvas in English on behalf of the Rabbinical Council of America on major issues, on use of microphones and mechitzes, and stained glass windows, and the chazans facing the community, when he davens, or the balkorei facing the community. These were taka landmark decisions, as he called it before. These are major tshuvas, I guess, that will have to be printed in the coming years by the family.
Sure. I just want Rav Schechter should feel a little bit better that there's at least one place that's still keeping the minhag of Rechayim, Sfronel and Rafa. We don't say my rabbis,
I'm sure.
Holding the